You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's a bit of a peek behind the paywall at the Anfield Wrap. It's John Gibbons here with Neil Atkinson, and we're going to talk a little bit about January and the madness of January with everything going on, and the madness of Rob Gutman and how he comes alive in a transfer window, I would say, Neil. But he starts coming alive in the build-up. You know, he starts messaging saying, I really think we should be doing gutters.
Mid-November.
And then says, we need to be doing more. when we sort of put them in, and then at some point you'll say, I'm not sure if we can do that many, and then you'll say, should we change this to a gutter instead? Man loves a transfer.
Absolutely loves a transfer. Is all over them, is scouring constantly, never under scoured in terms of any link really that he feels as though is, you know, there's levels of plausibility, the stuff that even Rob would shirk at or would feel. What he would say instead is he would message me and say, he'll send me something sometimes, message me and say, I want to, let's keep an eye on how this one develops. is his outlook on some of the more outlandish stuff. He'll never rule it out completely, but he likes to see how it will develop. And you know, everyone very much needs someone like that, I'd say, in their lives, let alone just sort of in terms of the football-based podcasts. And people love transfers. And, you know, the more and more, the longer and longer we do this job, the more and more I think about why that is. And I think there's loads of reasons for that. I don't think it's as straightforward as one sentence. And I don't think it's as straightforward as a patronising sort of people love the thrill of the shiny or the new, although I think that is part of it. I think that there's more to it than that. And obviously recruitment is genuinely, it's one of the most important things in football, if not in the rounds across any sort of 5-year period, the most important thing in football, you would argue. But I think that there's other reasons why people really, really like transfers. And I think at times people who are fortunate enough to get to go to games on a regular basis, you know, there is something that is fundamentally something that somewhere breaks the contract a little bit. Like, we are all in this together, but when only 3,000 of you can go away from home, there is a brief period where 3,000 of you are in it a teeny bit more than everyone else. And I said that as someone who's not been to a lot of away games this season. You know, I'm not sort of saying, acting as though anyone's better in this conversation. I've not been to that many aways this season.
And the last one you rather wouldn't have.
And the last one I was, yes, if I could turn back time, John, I share very wisely once said, if I could find a way. although we had a lovely time in Brighton.
Oh yeah, we'd have still got to Brighton.
Yeah, just... I mean, to paraphrase Cher, in the font, I would stay. there is something in this idea that obviously that moment of transfers, everyone wherever they are in the world, wherever they are locationally, no matter whatever sort of engagement they're able to have, whether or not they can afford a Sky Sports subscription and so on and so forth, everyone is sort of in it together for a brief second in terms of the excitement around the new player. And I think that is a bit that's worth remembering and not just sort of being quite sneery about. And in that, you know, that's why Rob, for instance, with his growing up in London, before moving to Liverpool to come to university and never leaving because of how much he loves the city and the commitment he's shown to the city in so many ways, but never leaving after that point. Part of that is, you know, what transfers get Rob's blood pumping is he's a 10-year-old boy back in his London bedroom, picking up copies of Shoot and seeing who Liverpool have been linked with. And, you know, we were talking when we were away, me and Rob, about all the information you used to sort of collect around footballers, and that's still in the transfer thing as well. Yeah. Either the thrill of the new information about a player, or, yeah, I've had my eye on him for a while. Like, the one I keep talking about recently is McAllister, because as you have said in the office from pretty much halfway through last season, I was telling people how good McAllister was. And then at the start of this season, I was like, is everyone on McAllister? Genuinely, is everyone on how well he's playing for Brighton? I was going on Brighton podcast. I was speaking to Alan Wares. I was talking McAllister up. And these were probably thinking, it's mad, this fella. But I would watch Brighton to watch McAllister. And now McAllister's boss and everyone's on it. And I just sort of feel a bit like, see? And that's sort of part of the transfer thing as well. See, these footballers exist. When I was looking at out-of-contract stuff, McAllister, before he signed the new deal before the World Cup, I was like, oh, his deal's up in 18 months. The Reds should be having a think about that. And I think that that's also something that people really get into. And as I say, I think Rob epitomises that brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, the show isn't half as good without sort of Rob's natural enthusiasm and sort of bursting out. But, you know, there is also the thing that transfers can genuinely revolutionise your team. And I think, you know, there's lots of things that can make you better. And, you know, transfers don't always work as well. So they're not the be-all and end-all because, you know, coach is important and management's really important and structure and finding the right fit. And also, sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But it's difficult to argue that if you look at the big transfers in Liverpool's recent history, the likes of Virgil, Alisson, Salah, Mane, how they send Liverpool up and level it almost instantly is undeniable and is sort of really quite something. And so whenever we are linked with someone and whenever we get close to buy someone and then whenever we do buy someone, you do have that thing where you're like, well, maybe he's the next one. Like, maybe Bellingham will come in and just sort the midfield, or maybe this guy will come in and will suddenly look better. And because that has happened to us recently.
It's happened recently, but I think it's, you know, it's a historical sort of part of this. I think the thing with the transfer thing, I mean, we've only got to literally look across the park at the moment to see what happens when transfers go bad.
Yes, you can spend money and be worse.
And be markedly worse and be on a trajectory of being worse, and part of that being, you know, dreadful recruitment and investment. But I think that there is, you know, you're able to go through Liverpool's history, and I've just sort of got it up on screen now, and it's fascinating to look at who Liverpool's record signings are. Going, you know, you can arguably go in terms of my own knowledge base, you know, you can go all the way back to Albert Stubbins, who was Liverpool's record signing when they signed him. You've then got Ian St. John.
John's a real game changer, isn't he, getting him?
It's constantly established as to the degree with which it was a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely enormous in there. But then you sort of keep going through the list, you know, the names, Peter Thompson, Emlyn Hughes. There is then Tony Hatley, and he's infamously one who Shankly feels that we got wrong. But, you know, Emlyn Hughes lifted the European Cup, and he's one of Liverpool's record signings. He literally lifted the European Cup as captain. You've got John Toshack, you've got Ray Kennedy, David Johnson, and then you've got Kenny Dalglish replacing Keegan for what was then a Liverpool record fee. Craig Johnston, which is interesting, I didn't know he was a Liverpool record transfer fee at the time. And then there's a massive leap to Mark Lawrenson, and then intriguingly Liverpool don't sort of go past the Rubicon of £1 million right the way through until they buy Peter Beardsley, who again was a major part of a big transition for Liverpool. Beardsley, Barnes, Houghton, and in the previous season Aldridge, Spackman and Venison. You know, Liverpool in effectively about a sort of a 15 month period did all six of those signings, and they all played a real difference, obviously not they weren't all John Barnes, or for that matter Peter Beardsley or John Aldridge, but they all played really significant roles. But then you also get to see when it does sort of go a little bit wrong, you know, Saunders, Babb and Collymore are the next three, and for whatever reason they don't quite work, and then you've got Heskey and Gibral, but then it's back to Torres, Suarez, admittedly Andy Carroll, then Mo Salah, and then you've got Van Dijk and Alisson in there, and you know, you mentioned them before, and it is, these are sort of critical moments when you do dip into the market, and when you do it in a big and bold way. And you know, I think Liverpool have got a, in the context of all of this, we expect there to be some big bold moves, regardless of what happens at the top of the club, frankly, in the next year or so. I don't think that feels as though it's beyond the pale, that there will be one or two quite big moves minimum, and it wouldn't surprise me if there's moves that are in general significant, regardless of where fees are, or including even free transfers. Or low transfers because of contractual situations, more than just two of them across the sort of the next 6-8 months or so. But ultimately, I think all of that is, you know, when you get those ones right, because the point about this is, have Liverpool had £75 million worth of value out of Virgil van Dijk? Yes, they have. Virgil van Dijk has more than shown his value, in the same way that did Liverpool get £37,500 worth of value out of Ian St. John? Absolutely. So I think all of that is obviously hugely significant, and it can lead to things transforming. I think where there's a problem, and where the manager feels as though there's a problem, is when people feel as though it is quite literally the only solution. And I think the manager almost feels that's a problem a little bit, not quite as a personal affront, but I think he's not too far away from going, "What do you think I am, chopped liver?"
Yeah.
And I think that that's worth remembering that. But that, then the flip side of that is, because I don't think he's chopped liver, is why I wouldn't have minded them maybe of making, I keep talking about that, you know, I wrote about it last year, I've wrote about the age thing, but last year I was writing in the summer about, if you're going to play with one more attacking midfielder, you maybe need to buy another attacking midfielder. And there might not have been the right obvious candidate with a big arrow above his head available. But there's a bit of an argument that, because I don't think the manager's chopped liver, because I think he's really good, if they'd have gone and got someone who they maybe weren't entirely sure about, he could have done something with that sort of footballer at some point. So there is a meeting of the minds on this, where it isn't thinking the manager does nothing, or that he just basically organises them a little bit and goes from there. There is the idea of why it's exciting sometimes if Liverpool do go big. Like, is Virgil van Dijk a better footballer for working with Jurgen Klopp? Absolutely, yeah. He is.
Yeah.
Is Mo Salah? Yeah, exactly. They're all better for working with Jurgen Klopp. But if you've already got your 75 million's worth and you've got the price about right, and then you add the Jurgen Klopp factor, then that's really exciting.
That attacking midfielder might be Mason Mount, that Neil was just talking about. There are links, credible links, as Rob stressed. He's got his own tiers, Rob Gutman. He might be tier one on Twitter, but Rob Gutman has his own, and so and he describes this link as credible. So we're gonna, well, you hear from Rob Gutman very briefly first, and then you've got Neil Dockin, Neil Atkinson, and Jake Nolan talking about Mason Mount. If you want to listen to the rest of this, we'd encourage you to download the app. If you've not downloaded it before, you get some free tokens, which you can use on this. You can use on the few other gutters that are left before the transfer window closes. There's obviously the Jurgen Klopp documentary that you can still dip into from it. Video side as well, so loads of great reasons to subscribe to the Anfield app. So download the app, subscribe, get stuck in, up the reds.
Neil, Mason Mount, I mean, whenever I you know, I concentrate on him mainly when he plays against us, and he always looks a threat to me. I mean, yeah. He's scored one or two against us down the years, I don't know, can't remember exactly. He's a decent footballer. Would you have him?
Yeah, I would. I think he's got a good goal scoring record for Chelsea. I think if he came into our squad, he'd immediately look like one of our biggest goal threats. At the moment, we don't seem to have many at all. I think the other year he got double figures in goals and assists. People always talk about how versatile he is. You know, he can play on the left, he can play on the right. As a 10, I think he says he sees himself more of an 8. You know, he's obviously a hard-working player. He's great at set pieces, takes a good corner. The homegrown thing I was going to mention as well. You know, you think about Oxlade-Chamberlain leaving in the summer. We're going to have to fill that gap potentially. He's a good age profile. He was 24. I don't think he's quite as short as some of our short lads. I think he's 5'11".
He could actually be 6 foot. Yeah.
No way.
Way.
No, I'm not having that.
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, physically robust player, I'd say. I'm not aware of him having a lot of injuries at a time when Chelsea seems to have had a lot. He seems pretty much an ever-present. I think he's very popular amongst their support. The first thing I thought when this came to light was just, is this just, you know, agent talk? Is this posturing? If all these new lads are getting weighed in at Stamford Bridge, does he want to get weighed in? Is that what this
be
is
well
about?
Within his rights for this to be entirely agent talk?
Yeah, and he has been one of their best players. You know, lifted the European Cup, a lot of experience. Yeah, I'd be really up for this move if it's genuine. If there is genuine interest there, and if he's interested in the challenge of coming up here, then maybe you could once defeat Neil's Southerners don't succeed at Liverpool rule.
I feared you were going to raise that. Is that going to be a worry for you, Neil? Or would you have an interest in Mason?
I mean, it would always be a worry. It's worth sort of dwelling on. There are exceptions, you know. And in fact, the player who Mount actually most reminds me of is one of the strong exceptions, which is Adam Lallana, who very much, I think, falls into profiles in loads of similar ways.
I agree.
Do you feel as though Mount has got the sort of the pace and the directness that you'd want in a wide forward? No, but Lallana didn't, and he was able to do a job for us there for a period. Do you feel as though he's got the raw creativity of a classic number 10? No, but his work rate is well above it. Do you feel as though he could be a number 8? In a pure sort of, you know, Liverpool, Wijnaldum, Henderson, Fabinho midfield sense of that three? No, but Lallana was able to more than contribute there.
Chamberlain.
And was able to, and also, you know, there's periods in his career where he's shown he really can work hard and work really intelligently. I've got all the stats from StatsBomb going back to 2019 about him, and there's seasons where he's unbelievable in deep progressions, unbelievable in on-ball value, really solid for the standards of a midfielder, not an attacking midfielder, I hasten to add, in terms of ball recoveries, tackles, interceptions and pressures and pressure regains. So he's got all of that. He's almost he's a little bit of a throwback from a Liverpool point of view, I would argue, to the idea of the footballer who comes in and you're not entirely sure what we do with him, but you wouldn't be surprised if we do something really, really good with him. So I think that there are, you know, there are, as I say, similarities there. Also, not dissimilar to Lallana, he is a bit taller than you think. In everyone's heads, Lallana is about 5'4", whereas in reality, he's a solid 5'9", 5'10", in and of himself. I think it's a really interesting link. I think it's probably at this stage, it wouldn't surprise me. This feels to me a little bit like, you know, to me, it feels a little bit Zielinski. And the reason why it feels a little bit Zielinski is I think there's no doubt Liverpool, I think if you're Mason Mount's agent, you would be able to make a really compelling case to Chelsea that Liverpool have long had, up to and including when he was a very young player, a very real interest in your footballer. And that Liverpool would probably be able to rekindle that interest again. Whether or not there's anything that's sort of greater than that, you know, I think once you're on Liverpool's list, I've always said this, I just think you're on Liverpool's list. If they've seen certain things that you're profiling really, really impressively, then I think they're going to keep you on there. So I think that Mount may well be on Liverpool's list. I just sort of think this surely ends up with a new deal at Chelsea. I sort of struggle to get away from that. The only thing that makes me think it might not is that I do think that Chelsea might just be a bit of a madhouse. And I do think that there is going to be massive questions. Like already UEFA, for instance, are closing this loophole on these contracts that they're trying to pull. So they're trying to pull the rug under them there. The FFP rules, and I know people don't like it when you mention them, but they are tightening over the next sort of 3 or 4 years around where you're meant to be for transfers and for contracts. And I think that's one of the reasons why you can make a really strong game theory argument that Chelsea doing a lot of what they're doing now could well be them getting ahead of the way in which the rules are going to operate in years to come. Don't get me wrong, but I think that within there, there's only going to be room for so many. There's a lot of talk, for instance, Mudrick's meant to come in on 97 grand a week. It's very Liverpool Mudrick, quietly, in that he's coming on a big fee, but he's not coming in on unreal whack from day one. It's obviously incredible money, but it's not unreal whack from day one. And if Chelsea are trying to realign their wage budget over a period of time, the idea that you take Mason Mount and say double his money is difficult, whereas there's an argument Liverpool might look at Mason Mount and say, well, we give you double your money, and then we'll be able to turn to Chelsea and say, and we give you this fee, and we know you've got some degree of books to balance, especially if Liverpool or Chelsea or Chelsea especially obviously don't finish in the Champions League places. They will have to confer with these loopholes. They can have loopholes, but they've still got to, even with the loopholes, get in under the cutoff. So I think there's feasibility in it. I'd love something a bit more concrete. And I think the other phase of this is, from everyone's current mindset, it also feels very like one that gets sorted in the summer. It doesn't feel like one that gets sorted in the next week.
Oh, no, I don't see it for January. Jake, I mean, yeah, just continuing on from some of the things Neil's touched on there, there are two things at play that could make this a more of a live one, albeit in the summer, than might be at first appear at first sight. That is, the Mudrick wage in 97 does suggest that they'd have a job. Mason Mount's agent would have a job securing something like 150, which is, I'm sure, the minimum he would be asking for. And also, Chelsea are going to need to sell assets. They're going to want to have saleable assets. They're going to be drawing up a list of who are the lads we don't think we're 100% going to need, who we can sell. Liverpool are almost in a similar situation for different reasons, which we'll come on to. Now, Chelsea are already looking at Raheem Sterling and going, ah, you know what, did we not get the best years of him? Could we sell him? Mount, in the summer, they're still looking at, I don't know, 40-odd million for him. It could be attractive to them to get rid.
Yeah, I know a lot's been made about Chelsea in their current predicament, but it's almost, even though it's a lot, it's almost like not enough's been made about it as well. Like, that is such, for lack of a better term, such a bollock what's going on there, both on and on the pitch. And they've got some seriously, seriously big balancing acts to be done. And I think the thing that makes me potentially pour a little bit of cold water on this, though, is, and it depends how long, you know, he lasts for whether he goes or he gets let go or whatnot. I can see Mason Mount doing well under Potter, in the sense of, we played against him the weekend. We all know he loves a change of shape. We all know he loves his players to work hard. We all know he likes adaptability. And that is Mason Mount all over, really, isn't it? You know, he plays in several different positions. He does a job for the team. And he does those things. So I can see, you know, if Graham Potter trying to make this a little bit of a priority in terms of keeping him, I'm not certainly sure that he wouldn't want to let him go. But like you said, Rob, there's got to be some balancing act everywhere. And I know we'll come on to it with our team as well. But But yeah, they're going to have to do something. Otherwise, I just don't understand the rules anymore. Sports Social Podcast Network.